Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And I would think that by now my throat would be better, but it hasn't improved as much as I would hope. I guess we heal proportionate to our age. As you know, as we slow down, get older, it just takes a little bit longer to heal. Because obviously when I was much younger, I was able to, you know, from a cold or what have you, get back on my feet pretty quickly. Anyway, this isn't about me. This is about Christmas. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And as you know, this show is about the academic solutions and the evidence necessary to get us in the path and in instituting the solutions required. But this particular show is a special show. This particular show is about Christmas because it actually gives us a good glimpse in how society, how people, and how a nation, and how the world can be manipulated. Now, I'm going to tell you that the manipulation, in some ways, was for a good thing. And as people kind of built upon it, it had become one of those, Christmas had become one of those things that actually has had an effect on the entire world. Now, even China may not recognize Christmas, but they sure recognize the amount of production that they, you know, exercise in regards to our consumption for Christmas, because we sure help the world economy because we are a very giving nation. Or I should say Western society is a very giving society. We're not the only ones. Europe and Christian society and Christendom throughout the world is obviously a huge consumer of the giving of Christmas. But I want you to understand that the intent, because let me just pose this question that you can ponder while I talk about Christmas, so that as we go through the historical information regarding Christmas, you can think, are we as Christians judged by non-believers, non-Christians, on how, not how we celebrate Christmas, but how we only celebrate Christmas? In other words, it seems like this is the time of year where we become the real Christians that we believe in, or the Christianity, and try to follow the Christianity, even though we have a misguided assertion of a lot of our wealth and resources go towards the giving of gifts. And when I say giving of gifts, I'm talking about worldly gifts, not spiritual gifts, not gifts of meaning, as, you know, as we try to emulate that, you know, the wise men and the giving of the gifts to the Lord Jesus and so forth. So are we being seen as hypocrites because we only become Christians, or we only start living the true doctrine of Christianity at this point in time? I'll let you ponder on that as we dive forward. I'm just going to make a couple of obligatories. I'm not even going to do promos or anything else. Well, dude, we got the promos because my throat's going to need the break. But I want you to understand that we need to start planting seeds for the Constitution so that we can start anticipating, just like we anticipate the 4th of July, we anticipate Christmas, we anticipate points in the year. We should be anticipating the 17th of September, and we should be making a much greater focus on recognizing the Constitution, its importance, and the importance of complying to the Constitution. Okay? So with that, let me also kind of just jump forward in this whole concept of Christmas, but we do have a listen line, and I ask you to plug this into your cell phone so that while you're traveling, if you can't stream, because I get it. You know, we're especially this time of year, if you're traveling or what have you, you want to actually dial this number so that during the time of this show, you can actually hear the show, good sound quality, and you should be able to enjoy the, or at least learn from the content and information that we provide. The number is 605-562-4209. Now, the other number that we have, that we're always open for your comments, 425-270-5416. Okay? So if you've had that Red State coffee and you go, wow, that's pretty good. Give us your feedback on anything, especially the Red State coffee, because we want to make sure that other listeners hear what listeners think of Red State coffee. So with that, let's dive into Christmas. Now, I speak a lot about Platonism, but I don't speak enough about Platonism. And as a matter of fact, anybody that has heard that word before, then you understand what it is. But there are probably a lot of people, because we've grown, there are a lot of people that have never heard the term Platonism. Platonism is the concept of Plato's, I'll just call it Plato's Republic or Plato's rendition of statism. If you understand statism in the context to Plato's Republic, then you understand that Plato was the first to put pen to paper or parchment, whatever it was at that point in time. But he was the first to dedicate the writing of communism, where people became subjects and subjugated to the state, where the state dictated every facet of your life, who married who, what you were going to do, and you know, everybody was to be happy because everybody was taken care of. Now, we do not live in Plato's Republic of Communism because, well, if you understand Plato's Republic, the leaders, the elitists of the world, were not to have any riches or any, you know, possessions or anything else. But you can see that our global elitists are the ones that actually possess all those things. They're not supposed to have any of those things. They're just supposed to be able to, you know, live a life of opulence without having to spend a penny or without having to own anything. But anyway, I'd highly recommend. As a matter of fact, Plato's Republic is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. I believe it is on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page. Anyway, today, this Christmas show should give you a macro view on how the Platonists, the communists, first began mass manipulation. It was probably the first, and I don't want to say an exercise, it was the first execution of a major manipulation of a society. Keep in mind that the new Platonist efforts began in 1776 in Germany with Adam Weishaupt chartering the concept of the Illuminati, this gifted, educated, smart group of people that were out to subjugate the world. As I said in the previous episode, that their intent was to get rid of nations, princes, and even religion itself, that they were to create a human order. This Platonist effort was a direct contrast to what the framers were doing here in our republic in establishing individual liberty and individual sovereignty. As a perceived good, quote-unquote, for all the Platonists did what they, quote, believed, unquote, was necessary for setting the stage for future manipulations. This is why, and as a matter of fact, they leveraged themselves and they placed themselves into a situation where they absolutely benefited. If you understand the commercialism of Christmas and how much money we pour out as a good, I mean, hey, folks, what would this world be like if you Christians that celebrate Christmas actually decided to save your wealth and only give gifts of spiritual meaning and service and those types of things instead of just transferring your wealth for, you know, unfortunately, and sometimes it's just useless crap that is made cheaply from China. Anyway, I don't want to belittle anybody's gifts. This is why an accurate historic perspective is important, or at least as accurate as my filters can provide you, because I'll be the first one to tell you, I do have my biases. So let me attempt to give you an encapsulated view of infusing Kenneth Cook's work with my perspective. In the early 17th century, a wave of religious reform changed the way Christmas was celebrated in Europe. Now, you got to remember, the 17th century, when was that? That was the 1600s. What was going on? People were leaving Europe, or I should say people were leaving the Rock, the UK, Britain, to come to America to actually have, you know, the freedom of being able to religiously free themselves from the entanglements of the, you know, the large religious church, Catholicism and so forth, and get closer to a purer faith. So in the early 17th century, a wave of religious reform changed the way Europe was celebrating its winter holidays or Christmas. And this was during our first awakening here in America, our move towards religious tolerance. This was during America's first religious awakening, and this move of tolerance actually became, if you understand, it became the premise that set the stage for our Bill of Rights and the concept of freedom of religion. But I'm here to tell you that the framers and their concept of freedom of religion did not include freedom of all religions, or the right to have practice all religions, because at that point in time, they actually had bans on all other religions other than Christianity, because even Judaism was not allowed in the colonies at that point in time. But we'll be right back after these two promos to move forward into this historical view of Christmas and maybe how we can change. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
And so in Europe, Oliver Cromwell and his Puritan forces, I would say following, but, you know, if you understand, even the Puritans here in America were very draconian. I mean, they kicked out anybody that thought otherwise. So anybody to think that the colonies were all just one happy Christian nation, no. Everybody had their own slice of Christianity. And I've told you before, I've got an article coming forth, and it's taken me a long time to do because it's just...
there's a lot to get your arms around in trying to provide a really good, and so it's going to be a multi-part article, so I apologize, but I'm trying to set this up so that I can actually prove, you know, how America and its origins, what, you know, how integral Christianity was in creating the greatest republic, and how this nation really was a Christian nation. It was a nation of Christians. It was not a theological nation, because when you use the term Christian, you're not referring to a specific faith or sect, correct? I mean, so if we were Anglican, then that means that we were under the crown of England, because at that point in time, the Anglican Church, just like the Roman Catholic Church, was the Church of the Italians, which then was inflicted upon the world, which, anyway, I digress. So in 1645, Oliver Cromwell and his Puritan forces took over England, and they vowed to get rid of the English decadence. And as a part of their efforts, they canceled the winter holiday as what was starting to be referred to as this concept of Christmas. Now, Charles II was restored to the throne, and with him came the return of the popular winter wilding holiday. Because you have to understand that there was no, you know, peace on earth and goodwill towards men as a part of the winter wilding holiday at that point in time. They had not tied all the things together. That happened much later. Keep in mind also that this was a precursor to the Glorious Revolution in Britain. In other words, the British people were being tossed to and fro. That's why so many were coming to America, because they were getting rid of the influences of the crown and government. Because when you came to America, you were, you know, months away from having any contact and communications and so forth. And it was so hard for Britain to put their draconian thumbs on the colonies to actually control every facet of what they were doing. And as we started moving towards the revolution, that's exactly what Britain started to do. As they started growing their navy and growing their, you know, force in controlling their empire, they became more efficient and better at that. And that's when we revolted. And thank heavens we did. But again, like I said, what was going on in England, this was all a precursor to the Glorious Revolution. The Pilgrims, who were English separatists, came to America. And when I say separatist, there were many different separatist aspects. There were those of commercial, there were those of religious. So there were different types of separatists that wanted to get away from the draconian tactics of the English crown and, you know, their rule. And so these separatists that we're talking about, the Pilgrims in 1620, they were even more orthodox in their Puritan beliefs than Cromwell. And now I know I spoke about this on Thanksgiving in my previous Thanksgiving broadcast, because I do this every year for Thanksgiving and Christmas. Anyway, the pagan version of Christmas was not a holiday in early America. It was more of a wilding, and that's really what it was a, you know, a point in time where, you know, and it wasn't just maybe a day, it was maybe a week or however long, you know, the storage of brews or whiskeys and so forth would last. Or money in the pocket to pay for that would last, and people would just, you know, hunker down and just get crazy. Anyway, from 1659 to 1681, the celebration of pagan Christmas was outlawed in Boston. Anyone exhibiting the what they called the Christmas spirit was fined 5 shillings. In contrast, down in the Jamestown settlement in Virginia, Captain John Smith reported that the pagan Christmas was enjoyed by all and passed, quote, without incident, close quote. So in other words, they were pretty well aware of how wild Christmas could be. After the American Revolution, English customs fell out of favor, including the pagan Christmas. And in fact, Congress was in session on December 25th, 1789, the first supposed Christmas under America's new Constitution. there was really no wilding or lewd and lascivious behavior that was out of hand at that point in time. And as a matter of fact, you know, we were just, you know, pulling up our britches after this Revolutionary War, or after the first phase of the Revolutionary War. Remember, that Revolutionary War wasn't settled until the War of 1812. Christmas wasn't declared a federal holiday technically until June 26, 1870, almost a century later. Up to this point, Christmas was recognized as a pagan holiday and not a Christian event, and it had no association to Christ whatsoever. In the 19th century, some Americans began to embrace pagan Christmas. Elitists reinvented Christmas and changed it from a loud and rowdy carnival holiday into a family-centered day of peace and nostalgia. What happened in the early 1800s that should actually pique our interest into the making of the Christmas holiday? And the end of the 18th century was the beginning of the class conflict and turmoil in England. In other words, if you understand, in the 18th century, the beginning of communism and the communist revolutions actually began because the French Revolution was a result of this basic concept of communism. This sentiment began leaching into America and the American culture. Unions actually started becoming, collectivism and labor and those types of things. Those concepts of communism started infiltrating the United States. In the early 19th century, unemployment was high, and gang rioting by the disenchanted classes often occurred during what we call the winter wilding, or, you know, the early days, the heathenish days, the non-Christ Christmas days, or what some of Americans would, would call Christmas, some. But again, these were really winter wildings. And in 1828, the New York City Council instituted the city's first police force in response to a Christmas riot. Now, again, there were probably lots of other reasons why they instituted that, but things were getting so out of hand that they needed to dedicate dedicated forces and or an organization towards maintaining peace and order and protecting life and property. So anyway, even before this, elitists were being harassed. And this is the whole point, my friends, because it was the minions, those who did not have, you know, were not well-to-do, did not have affluence, they were, you know, living hand-to-mouth. And so, you know, as they were getting drunk and disorderly, they started recognizing that the culprits or the bad guys were the elitists who, you know, they weren't drowning in their sorrows. They were, you know, up in their mansions counting their coins. And so, as things started moving forward, the elitists were being harassed, and this actually galvanized the elitists' intent to begin changing the way Christmas was celebrated in America, or more aptly stated, to change the behavior of the growing interest in this wilding time of year. Now, in 1819, Washington Irving wrote the sketchbook of Geoffrey Crayon, a gentleman, and this series of stories about the celebration of Christmas, an English manor's house, began shifting the paradigm of Christmas. The stories were about an English squire who invited the peasants into his home for the holiday. And so, in contrast to the problems faced in American society, the two groups mingled effortlessly. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, wow, the rich and the poor mingling together. In Irving's mind, Christmas was a peaceful, warm-hearted holiday bringing groups together across lines of wealth or social status, you know, so that we could all survive. Because you got to understand, winter was a time where, you know, the reaping occurred. You know, it was hard. if you couldn't survive and you didn't have a fire. I mean, you can see some of the old stories where just having a fire and some warm water and maybe a little piece of bread was, you know, the basis and the, you know, the fundamental needs of survival. Go look at what Washington went through during Valley Forge in the winter there. I mean, there were people that were dying just trying to survive winter because food wasn't growing off, you know, it wasn't like you could just go out and pick some berries and have some fruit and, you know, vegetables and so forth. Winter was a very hard time of year. We did not have international markets of, you know, food coming in around where you could have strawberries year round and so forth. So I'm sorry for digressing, but the whole point is that there was a change afoot. And so when we come back, we'll get back into more of Washington Irving's fictional celebrations and concepts. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
In Irving's fictional, quote-unquote, celebrations, the disparate classes, the poor, the rich, the middle class, enjoyed what we imagined were ancient customs. To be clear, Irving's book series was not based on any holiday celebration that he had ever attended. And in fact, historians say that Irving's accounts actually invented tradition by implying that it described the true customs of the season. The early 19th century was also the beginning of the Second Awakening in America. The evangelical faith was beginning as the Republic was beginning to enjoy peace from the end of the American Revolution. Again, we're talking about 1820s, early 1830s. The technical end of the Revolution, as I have said many times, came by the Treaty of Ghent signed in 1814 by both England and the United States. Now, The abolition movement, which actually started in the 20s, was entrenched in America, and former President John Quincy Adams dedicated the rest of his political career to serve in the U.S. Senate to fight for slavery and slavery's new political protector, the Democratic Party. This was after Quincy was unseated by the new Democratic president, Andrew Jackson. As such, the North and South were divided on slavery and even on the issue of Christmas. If you understand statism and the concept of subjugation, it is tantamount, my friends. It is tantamount to slavery. Many Northerners saw sin in the celebration of the winter wilding. To these people, the different celebrations of Thanksgiving was more than appropriate. In the South, Christmas was an important part of the social season. Not surprisingly, the first three states to make Christmas a legal holiday were in the South. It was Alabama in 1836, and then Louisiana and Arkansas in 1838. Slowly, the new concept of Christmas began to grow. In the years after the Civil War, Christmas traditions started to spread across the country. Children's books played an important role, and there was a lot of work in people manufacturing concepts to create customs for celebrating Christmas, especially the tradition of trim trees and gifts delivered by Santa Claus. Now, have you ever heard of an anagram? An anagram is where you take a word and you can make another word out of it. Isn't it interesting that Santa can be also Satan? Isn't that interesting? Just pointing out an anagram that exists here. Anyway, and I'm not here to kick Santa. The whole point is to actually focus on what we should be focusing as Christians, not just for this time of year, but using this year as a guide to living this way throughout the year. Anyway, Sunday school classes encourage the celebration of the new Christian version. Because here it is, right here, the new Christian version of Christmas. Now, I'll just say it right now. There is nothing wrong with, you know, centering anything, whether it be the 4th of July, or whether it be Thanksgiving, whether it be New Year's, or the winter or summer solstice, or even the equinoxes. There is nothing wrong with centering that time and that date on Christ. As a matter of fact, there's nothing wrong with centering 365 days of the year on Christ. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Okay? And as a matter of fact, women's magazines of the time and other periodicals were important in suggesting ways to decorate for the holidays as well as how to make these decorations. Thus, establishing a tradition that has now spanned generations in this republic. Children's books, I mean, you can start your own tradition, folks, right? You probably have your own family tradition, and you probably instituted, you know, a family tradition that was based upon other previous family traditions and so forth. That's what we do. People are all about traditions. And so anyway, children's books played, again, an important role in spreading these customs of celebrating Christmas, and especially, like I said, this concept of Santa Claus. Store catalogs began promoting items and sales on items associated to this new Christmas tradition. In other words, opportunists started recognizing an opportunity here. And it started actually focusing. And I'm here to tell you, I don't think it was just necessarily opportunists. I truly believe, wink, wink, nod, nod, that those who got behind and started manufacturing this were already pushing things in a control format so that they could get you to spend your wealth so that they could make more money building their wealth on commercializing Christmas. At this time, literature and the progressive press had begun to congeal in manipulating social affairs. President Ulysses S. Grant declared Christmas a legal holiday in 1870. The bill to make Christmas a holiday was introduced in the House of Representatives by Representative Burt Chauncey Cook of Illinois. It was approved and passed on the Senate or on the Senate floor June 24th, 1870, when both houses had agreed on the wording, it was passed by President Grant, who signed it June 28th, 1870. Now, this is important. I want you to go back and read the Proclamation of Thanksgiving by George Washington. And then I want you to read this. I'm going to read it for you. And listen to how absent the recognition of Christ in the celebration of Christmas is as a nation, in contrast to that first proclamation of Thanksgiving. This is going to blow you away. And this is what it says. An act making the first day of January, the 25th day of December, the 4th day of July, and Thanksgiving Day holidays within the District of Columbia, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of American Congress assembled, that the following days, to wit. And so I just want to point out that they're only making this a holiday in the seat of government, in the national seat of government. Why? Because even at this point in time, they knew they only had exclusive legislative powers over the District of Columbia. They could not declare truly a national holiday. It was a holiday for national government, not the entire nation. Okay? The first day of January, commonly called New Year's Day, the 4th day of July, the 25th day of September, commonly called Christmas Day, and any day appointed or recommended by the President of the United States as a day of public fast or Thanksgiving shall be holidays within the District of Columbia. So in other words, they understood the limitations of the Constitution. So when FDR and all these other presidents came out and said, we're actually inflicting, you know, mandated, you know, employers must compensate people for lost wages and everybody has to take a holiday, that was a huge overreach of the Constitution. Anyway, this act goes on and says, and shall, for all purposes of presenting for payment or acceptance of the maturity and protest and giving notice of the dishonor of bills of exchange, bank checks, and promissory notes, or other negotiable or commercial paper, be treated and considered as in the first day of the week, commonly called Sunday, and all notes, drafts, checks, and or commercial and or negotiable paper falling due or maturing on either of the said holidays shall be deemed as having matured on the day previous. In other words, they're basically defining how the government is operating for those particular days. By the last quarter of the 19th century, America eagerly decorated trees, caroled, baked, and shopped for the Christmas season. Since that time, materialism, media, money, advertising, and mass marketing has made Christmas what it is today. Now, I want you to understand this, and I'm going to just kind of take a quick digress. If you go and you do the research on all of your favorite Christmas hymns, because clearly these hymns have been, you know, passed down from generation to generation that reach, you know, what GR is saying can't make any sense. That, you know, many of these hymns, if not some of them, you know, reach all the way back to the 1600s, 1500s, and so forth when Christmas was initiated, right? I mean, they called it Christmas. Sorry for the breakup there with the voice. The fact of the matter is, my friends, if you look at the copyrights, when those songs were actually written, or, you know, the origin date first published of these particular songs, you will find that every song that you're going to find that actually was about Christmas, that we understand it, was written after Irving's attempt in manipulating and changing. And so what I'm telling you was, maybe it wasn't a real grand conspiracy other than the intent of opportunity provided by what this small conspiracy offered. Because what Irving and the elitists were doing was they knew that if I start talking about the abundance of gold, that there's just too much gold, and I had the type of influence and the press, and had the press start talking about, well, there's just way too much gold out there. The same thing with currency. You would find that the value of gold would go down. It's the same thing with oil. If all of a sudden people started, you know, identifying what a, you know, what a shortage of oil there is, you know, and you start, you know, doing estimates, and you can make the case, you can actually bring up the cost and the value of oil. As people, it's called speculation, but as people start looking at Christmas and the opportunity, there was a lot of speculation. Got a break. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framers perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so the traditions that we enjoy at Christmas today were invented. Whether we like that or not, that's the truth. Some things came by the blending. Some things we enjoy today came by the blending together of customs from many different countries into what is considered to be many to be our national holiday. Ergo, by doing this, by creating these associations and ties to these medieval practices and so forth, such as the drinking. I mean, we know that Christ talks about not getting drunk, and not, you know, and the Bible talks heavily about not being drunk. Anyway, ergo, the roots in the pagan acts give credence to, help obfuscate the truth that Christmas was not a holiday in Christ's time or was a holiday of Christians. The holiday of Christians was recognizing Passover, was recognizing those long-time traditions that the house of Israel recognized. I mean, Christ was a Jew. And so there were things that we could easily recognize, you know, like the Sermon on the Mount, and we could recognize all sorts of things and try to emulate that as a people, but not as a nation, not as a form of government, because we shouldn't have. You're talking to a person that just does not believe in holidays. I mean, Thanksgiving is a good holiday because it's supposed to be a holiday in serving him, our benefactor, that had given us our Constitution and who had given us the ability to protect our inalienable rights that he bestowed upon us as human creatures in his likeness. So just to be clear here, what we're doing as we start tying things to maybe a historic event or you know, a mixture of cultures, what they've done is they've actually made it so that they can easily convince the unwitting to say, oh, these are traditions of Christendom and so forth, when really the fact is they're not. Now, that said, many Christians today may not know the details of Christmas. As a matter of fact, very few people do. But almost all know that it is a pagan holiday that was infused with celebrating the birth of Christ. As Christians, we can choose when we celebrate the birth of our Savior, either on his date or for Christmas, or we could celebrate his birthday every day of the year, the same thing as his atonement. We don't have to have Easter to recognize and celebrate his atonement for our sins. But we must remember that we have adopted a spirit to this holiday that sets us apart from the pagan world. And that's why I asked you to consider, are we being judged as hypocrites because we only become Christians because of the spirit of Christmas instead of the spirit of Christ throughout, you know, the 365 days of the year? We know that Christ was not really born at this time. Bringing people together in his name, though, is always good. Let us not surrender this time of year we call Christmas to paganism or materialism. Let us instead focus on the spirit of the holiday. Instead, let's make his spirit the new norm to this and every season. You know, how many times you have, hey, there's, you know, the reason for the season or the spirit. Why can't you just apply that to every day of life, every season of the year? Why is it that we have to use and save ourselves for becoming real Christians for this season and this time of year? And then we forget everybody and we just go off our own way in, you know, serving ourselves or what have you. And I'm not saying that that's what a lot of you do, but I think that most everybody listening can see and understand how this is what's really happening. Anyway, if we move away from the commercialization of Christmas and towards giving of one's talents, time, and sustenance to those who are truly in need now and all the year, I believe we will see this area, your community, your state, your county, and this nation once again become blessed. Service in his name is always divine, which is why Congress unanimously, I want to go back on this, Congress unanimously asked President Washington to declare a giving of thanks for the, I think it was the fourth Thursday of November, to give service to him in recognizing the blessings he bestowed upon these states and this nation in giving us this Constitution and giving us the peace necessary. I mean, go back and read that proclamation. And then contrast it to what Ulysses S. Grant and Congress wrote as the proclamation for recognizing Christmas as a holiday for the District of Columbia. And then how did that become a holiday for everybody? Where in the Constitution, by the way, does the federal government have the ability to actually create a holiday? Now, when Madison, because I'll tell you, Madison did this several times. Madison would actually make a proclamation of prayer and thanksgiving, and then he would actually recall it. Why? Because he felt as a president, he was trying to push upon the nation maybe a form of Christendom that was not within their, you know, their faith and paradigm. Because he knew that the federal government had no role and or responsibility in calling for people to exercise a particular faith or a form of faith. And at that point in time, and to even give you this concept of the word secular. Secular in their time did not mean void of Christianity. Secularism was the concept that we use today that we refer to as non-denominational. They were not getting rid of Christendom and Christianity within the states and the state-sponsored Christian churches. At that point in time, they were, I'll just say, ensconced. They were living within Christendom. You know, Christianity was a part of life. It was a part of their government at the state level. And the whole point of why the federal government was not Christian or of a Christian faith is because it was not the government's job to dictate which faith, which is why they weren't to establish a church. And all the while, as they started moving away and away and away from, you know, any type of religious expression, they literally got the Bill of Rights turned upside down, and now they are creating laws and enforcing laws that prohibit the religious expression. In other words, they have taken the spirit of the Bill of Rights and completely perverted it and twisted it. But the whole point, and the reason I went on this digression, was if you understand the mentality and the paradigm of the framers, they recognize the divine hand of providence. This is why I say this, and I say this all the time. They constantly, and to their deaths, they never recanted the inspiration and the involvement of the divine hand of providence in almost everything that they did, from Washington and fighting the revolution to the inspiration of the Continental Congress, the inspiration of the Articles of Confederation, and more importantly, the inspiration of the Constitution and our Bill of Rights. My friends, we have an opportunity. We have an opportunity to actually send a message to the world that is making an obscene amount of money and using it for evil purposes like China in organ harvesting and everything that they are doing that is the epitome of evil as a Christian would see it. We have an opportunity of sending a message and saying, we're no longer going to spend obscene money. You know, for this, we're going to reserve money for this time of year to just spend it to give. From now on, what we should be doing, as I have said, is we should actually be giving of one's talents, time, and sustenance to those who are truly in need. You know, instead of giving to your kids, teach your kids to give. Go to the retirement homes. I remember when I was a kid, that's what we did. You know, I lived in a very humble family, and we did not have a very lavish Christmas. And I remember one year when my father was doing pretty well. He was making, you know, a good amount of money, and he was finally able to get gifts that, you know, he could basically, you know, answer all of our wants for gifts that year. And how bad he felt and how he made Christmas commercial. In other words, materialistic, and not sending the message to us, because as a parent, you know, it is our responsibility to constantly teach and nurture our children to walk in the ways that they're, you know, of the Lord, and the way we're supposed to live. And so I know that he was not necessarily upset, but I know he felt that he sent a bad message that year. My friends, we have a chance to actually do service in his name. And when we do that, it is divine. Merry Christmas to you. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.